Shannon Hayes, our next guest, writes and works with her family on Sap Bush Hollow Farm in upstate Richmondville, New York, where they raised pastured livestock. She has a PhD in sustainable agriculture and community development from Cornell University and is the author, as I mentioned, of The Grass-Fed Gourmet and her new book that we'll be talking about, titled The Farmer and the Grill, A Guide to Grilling, Barbecuing, and Spit Roasting Grass-Fed Meat and for Saving the Planet One Bite at a Time, published by Left to Right Press. And we're really pleased to have her with us by phone today. You may have some questions as we move along, and I hope you do, and I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Shannon Hayes, welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me.
You discovered a grill, and I think you got it for a housewarming gift, wasn't it?
Yes, and it sat unused for quite some time. My husband kept thinking that I should be the one using it because I seemed to like cooking so much, but I was pretty certain that, you know, the rule of domestic peace is that women have the stoves and men have the grills.
But he didn't go along with that.
No, he didn't. He had a hunch.
And so you got involved, and you're doing the grilling.
Yes, I am. I do it all the time now.
Well, you've got, you very specifically talk about grass-fed meat and grilling grass-fed meat. What would be the difference between grass-fed meat and, say, grain-fed meat?
Okay. Well, when people make the foray into grass-fed meat, the most important thing that we have to know about is that the meat is going to be variable. When we are conditioned to eat meat from a conventional food system where the animals are raised in confinement in factory farming conditions, a lot of things happen. You know, there are the environmental transgressions that we have all heard about, the health issues, whatever. The meat is not known for being flavorful, but the one thing conventional meat is known for is being consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Grass-fed meat, if it comes from a healthy ecosystem, is going to vary widely. The genetics of which animals are going to perform best on which farmers' pastures are going to vary considerably, and the growing season is going to vary, the grasses are going to vary, and all of that means that the meat itself will vary as well. Also, because it's processed by local independent artisanal butchers, the cuts are going to vary also. So when we're dealing with grass-fed meat, the first thing we need to remember is that it may not cook like the recipe in the standard cookbook tells me to. I need to be very careful about monitoring the temperatures. You want to make sure that we're cooking at lower temperatures in case the meat is leaner so that the muscle fibers don't contract too quickly and make the meat tough. And you want to take the meat off at a lower internal temperature. So you want to be using an internal meat thermometer. So these are all ways to be prepared to deal with the natural variation that happens when we're getting meat from a healthy ecosystem.
And, you know, certainly in Wisconsin, we're seeing a movement to a lot of people are going to grass-fed or pasture-fed animals and enjoying that lifestyle that comes with it.
Yeah, it tastes a lot better.
It does. How did you folks happen to get, I mean, you have your PhD in sustainable agriculture. Often people with PhDs aren't so heavily involved in farming themselves. How did you happen to evolve into that?
Well, it's kind of funny. I grew up on my family's farm, and we live in the northern foothills of the Appalachian mountain chain. And truth be told, I never wanted to leave. And so I was a good student, and there was a local agricultural college nearby, and I thought, well, if I get my PhD, then maybe I can become a professor there, and I can continue to farm and write. And so I went through, and I diligently got that degree, and I was working the whole time pursuing interests that I thought pertained to the issues that our farm was facing in this day and age. And lo and behold, once I finished that degree, I found out from the local college that my politics were entirely too radical to be considered at an agricultural college. So my husband said, well, why did you get that degree to begin with? I said, well, because I wanted to farm and write, and I care about these issues. And he said, so work on those. So he was right about the grill, and he was right about what to do with the degree. So now I use my PhD to do a heck of a lot of research, and but I'm based off the farm, and I absolutely love it there. My father has a PhD, too. He has one in animal science, and we've both found that the true living laboratory is the best place for us.
Shannon Hayes, our guest today, author of The Farmer and the Grill, a guide to grilling, barbecuing, and spit roasting grass-fed meat. Give us a call with your questions or comments, or maybe you've got some experiences to share about your own cooking and grilling with grass-fed animals. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call or email us at talk@wpr.org. Wondering about the differences between grilling direct and indirect when it comes to and barbecuing when it comes to using a grill.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we're working with grass-fed meat that, again, will have that natural variation in fat, the real trick, if you're going to be grilling, well, let me back up and just talk about what's the difference between grilling and barbecuing.
That's, I should have asked that right away.
Okay.
Right.
Well, the difference between grilling and barbecuing, grilling, you're working more directly with the flame for a shorter period of time, and barbecuing, you're really cooking more with the smoke, and you're cooking meats for a much longer period of time at a much lower temperature. But when it comes to actually grilling grass-fed meats, in most cases, you will be indirectly grilling. If you're going to have the product come out the best possible way, it should be done indirectly. So, for example, if you want to cook a steak, like a nice ribeye steak, let's say it's about 1.5 inches thick, you get the flames good and hot on one side of the grill only. And, you know, hot means if you hold your hand 4 or 5 inches above the flame, then you can keep it there for no more than 4 or 5 seconds. So once it's nice and medium hot, then you sear it for about 3 minutes per side, and then you move that steak right off the grill, move it to the other side where there is no heat on whatsoever. You put the lid down on the grill, and you let it go for, you know, maybe 15 minutes or until the internal temperature is what you want it to be. That's indirect grilling. What happens then is a lot of people think when they get grilled meat, they're looking for, you know, for char, but they're not. What you're really looking for with grilled meat is the flavor that results from caramelization of the meat. So when you put it directly over the heat, the meat is getting a good sear, but when you move the meat off the heat and cook it indirectly with the lid on, then the proteins, the fats, and the sugars can all caramelize on the surface of the meat, and that's what makes that true, robust, wood, smoky, delicious flavor that really epitomizes great grill taste.
You're making me hungry.
Good.
Susie and Franklin, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Susie.
Hi. I just tuned in, so perhaps this has been addressed, and I apologize if it has, but my sisters and I, we really are interested in eating meat that is grass-fed, particularly beef. So we would like to try to find out where we could purchase a cow and all share the meat, you know, particularly then those that are grass-fed, because we don't want this corn-fed beef.
All right. Well, Shannon may not be able to give you specific information about Wisconsin here. I might be able to help on that. But what in general, Shannon, what do you do?
Well, I think the very best place to start is on a website called eatwild.com, EATWILD.com. That website contains exhaustive information about all the benefits of grass-fed meat, but it also has the most comprehensive directory of farmers across the country. So you can go for the state of Wisconsin, you can look it up, and you can find all farmers, whether they're offering retail cuts or, as she was looking for, you know, wholes, halves, and the like. And they'll talk about their grazing practices. They should provide contact information. So if you don't have a local farmers market that you can get to right away, that's the best place to start.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for calling. And I was going to say, we have a number of really great farmers markets in Wisconsin, and I think the one in Madison is considered one of the best in the United States.
Yes, that one's famous.
And it's a wonderful farmer's market, and you'll find there a lot of grass-fed meat at that farmer's market. But eatwild.com, that's the right website address. Okay. All right. Thanks, Susie. Louie and Kadat, your turn. Hi, Louie.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good.
Well, I wanted to say hello to your guests. I'm originally arisen in New York State, and I had a hobby farm in Afton, New York for many years.
Oh, that's not far from me.
No, not very far at all. Right. My wife and my late wife and myself moved here to Wisconsin about 32 years ago, I think, because we wanted to experience the Midwest, and we loved it here. My wife has passed on, and I'm not farming anymore, but I have a little hobby farm, and I'm thinking I'm going to start raising some organic grass-fed beef. So that's where I'm going, and so I have never, I mean, we had dairy cattle here, and I'm used to raising dairy cattle, but I've never raised any beef.
So you're wondering a little bit about how that's all done. I can tell you one thing, Louie, that you should be doing is probably getting in touch with UW Extension here, because they've been doing a lot of work on pasturing and grass feeding beef. So my advice to you right off the bat, and Shannon will have some advice too probably, is to get a hold of the Extension office agent in your county and ask about it, because I know they've got some materials for you. And we'll give Shannon a chance to make a comment as well, but we'll do that later. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking today with Shannon Hayes, author of The Farmer and the Grill, a guide to grilling, barbecuing, and spit-roasting grass-fed meat. Really pleased to have her with us, Larry Mueller here. You can join in with your questions and comments, too, and I hope you do at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Shannon, we were talking a little bit about raising your own grass-fed meat. I suggested that a good place to go is with UW Extension, who's been doing a lot of work on that here in Wisconsin. You may have a comment as well.
Yeah. The Extension is a great place to get started. And another thing that we're finding is that farmers are one of the best ways to learn. And
yes,
hopefully the Extension out there, I'm sure they're doing this, they're networking among the farmers. Because
yes,
This is one of those cases where for a long time our ag experts were proponing a different model of agriculture. And now this new model has come up, and there have been a number of farmers who have pioneered in this, and they're very good teachers, and it's very helpful to get partnered with them as you're going through this process. And a lot of the Extension people now have become very proficient at helping farmers find each other for farmer-to-farmer learning.
Yeah, there's been a lot of that here. Let's go to William in West B. William, hi.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I just wanted to call. I'm a big fan of Shannon's.
Oh, that's great.
a local farmer had given us a copy of the Grass-Fed Gourmet a couple of years ago, and it's just an outstanding book, and it's our go-to book for all things grass-fed and meat, so it's fantastic.
Wonderful, and I didn't pay him to call in.
Well, now this book is a lot different, though, from your first.
Yes, yep. The first book, the Grass-Fed Gourmet Cookbook, talks about everything that you need to know to cook the meat indoors, and The Farmer and the Grill is the new book, and that talks about how to cook outdoors, and that first book, The Grass-Fed Gourmet, will be re-released in a new edition. I've rewritten about 20% of it, so that'll be out in the fall.
Oh, in the fall. Well, we'll have you back for that for sure.
That's great. Some of my, I just wanted to say that the pulled pork recipe is not to be missed.
Oh, great.
If anyone's into pulled pork, your recipe is just, I've just brought people to tears at picnics. And
thanks, William. Thanks for calling.
You know, he touches on an interesting subject. I've been at barbecue cook-offs, actually, down south. I hosted a few of those down there, and One of the things that happened down there is I watched a grown man actually start to cry when he had real pastured barbecued pork. And it was a very embarrassing moment, you know, because we were all being very public in our discussion, but he started to weep, and he said, just take the microphone away. I have to think, I have to get away from this for a minute. But he said, this is the meat from my childhood. This is what food used to taste like, and I have not had this experience my whole life except for my childhood, and it finally, here's barbecue that brings me back to the way it's supposed to be.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. Thanks again, William. Appreciate it. Holly in Stetsonville is up next. Holly, hello to you.
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning. You there?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, good. Well, you tell Shannon her book is just wonderful. I got it for a birthday present this spring. And I'm a dairy farmer, but we're getting up there in years, and I chose, when I did my research on my beef, of what I wanted to transition to was the American Lowline Angus and the smaller version of the Highlands. Because they were a continental breed, they were known for converting grass very efficiently, and their minimal maintenance. They're small, not as intimidating as the bigger beef, as we know. And I did my first taste test this past January, and I got 5 thumbs up. The only problem I had was, Shannon, what do I tell the butcher on the New York Strip? That was the only piece that wasn't agreeable.
Well, really?
They thought that it was cut wrong or something, that it wasn't as tender. But other than that, compared to the buffalo meat, the butcher said they looked just like what was hanging next to the buffalo carcasses on the rack. So
I wonder if one of the things that's happening with the New York Strip is maybe it was trimmed a little too much. And the other question that I would have, because the New York Strip comes from a very tender part of the animal, it comes from the loin area, so it's right across from the actual tenderloin. It is, however, very lean. So even if the meat is taken off the grill while it's at a good temperature, even if it's not overcooked, if it was cooked too quickly, then those muscle fibers are going to contract really fast, and it's going to make the meat seem tough. So whereas a ribeye steak, you might not have that issue because there's more marbling, you could run into that with a New York strip. That's not uncommon.
Okay.
So just ease up the intensity of the flame.
And good luck, Holly. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, there's a satisfied purchaser of your book.
That's good. That's wonderful to hear as well.
Ernie in Springstead, it's your turn. Hi, Ernie.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling.
Taking my call. I just thought I'd tell you, every morning for breakfast, I have about 5.5 ounces of grass-fed ground buffalo meat, and it can be quite dry. So, and I do it in a microwave-covered dish, 20% power for 12 minutes, covered with canola oil. And I put a little of the canola oil on the plate because buffalo is still a little dry, and I eat it. I don't know if most people would cook that way, but buffalo is supposed to be high in iron. The meat's, you know, very dark red, almost maroon-colored.
Yeah, it is. And what do you think, Shannon? Have you done buffalo on the grill as well?
Yeah, I've worked with buffalo to a certain degree, but it doesn't. It's hard to get good grass-fed buffalo out here, and actually the stuff I've gotten, I've had to mail order from out by you.
Yeah.
But some of the tips that I would give on that, one of the things that I wondered when I heard that question is, first of all, was it overcooked? And so that the juices that were in the buffalo were extracted out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't microwave my meat. I tend to cook it in the skillet. And if I were going to be doing buffalo meat, I would probably get some nice pork fat or some butter and cook it in that. But I do think that it sounded like the buffalo meat was being brought to a more well-done stage than it should have been. It's very tricky when cooking buffalo because it is more red than regular beef. So when you start to cook it, you may think that it's rare when it's actually more medium in doneness. So it's very easy that way to overcook it if you're going by color.
Okay. Ernie, thank you very much for calling. I want to give Susie a chance from Viroqua to get on here. So let's go there. Hi, Susie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling. We purchase all of our meat grass-fed, and my husband likes to grill everything. And we have been told by other people who use grass-fed that there are certain parts of grass-fed meat that just don't grill and really should be done in a slow cooker. So I've learned to use a slow cooker, and I'm wondering if that's accurate, or if there's a different way of grilling that those larger pieces could be grilled.
Oh, your friends have misled you. They just don't have the right recipes.
So I need to get your book.
That's right. Boy, see, she's perfect. Keep her on the air. Yeah, the grass-fed, the farmer in the grill works with trying to teach people to cook all cuts of meat. And you can really do everything outside on the grill if that's what you want to do. And I sat down and systematically went through to cook every single one. Well, there's a couple tips that I'd like to give you. The first one, you need to decide what grilling, what outdoor cooking method, let's call it that, is most appropriate for the cut that you have. If you're working with beef, for example, and you have a piece from the chuck, no, it's not going to go well if you grill it. Even if you cook it indirectly, it's not going to go well. But if you take a nice chuck roast and you smoke it, you do a barbecue-style cook, and there's a number of recipes for doing that. That is equivalent to pot roasting it. You're working with smoke, steam, you're putting humidity in there, and that moisture breaks down the collagen in the meat, and it's going to cause the meat to be very tender and extremely delicious. Another thing that is important to know when you're working with the grill outside, you should have a rotisserie. I would say for your husband, if he's a father, the most important thing you should get him for Father's Day, besides my book, of course, is a rotisserie, because rotisseries enable you to take advantage of those cuts of meat that ordinarily would not do well being laid directly over the grate. A rotisserie helps you take advantage of the less expensive cuts of grass-fed meat. You can cook a whole pastured chicken on a rotisserie. You can cook a sirloin roast on a rotisserie. And it takes out a lot of the guest factors. It keeps the meat cooking at a more even temperature, the meat base in its own juices. And when you're working with meat that can be more variable, the rotisserie will help you to have more dependable results. And it's very interesting. Rotisseries have really gone out of fashion in this country, but they are still quite popular in parts of the world where they are relying on artisanal meat production. So it's funny that we don't use them so much here, where the meat has become so conventional. But when we are working with artisanal meats, to have that rotisserie does really help us to bring out the best flavor and helps us to make the use of the more economical cuts when we want to cook outside.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. You know, that's true. When I was quite a bit younger, everybody had a rotisserie on their grill, and we used to do a lot of it that way, and it sort of just went away.
I know. We have a lot of customers who insist if they want chicken from me during the farmer's market season, they want it all cut up. And it really bugs me because you're wasting so much meat. You know, they don't take the back at all. But when you put that chicken, you can take that whole chicken. First of all, it's usually cheaper to buy the whole chicken than it is to buy the cut-up pieces.
Right.
But you can put that on the rotisserie, and it's fabulous, absolutely fabulous.
And, you know, in your cooking, and I was reading in one, I love the book, not only the recipes, but you have some little side stories, and this sort of relates to what you were talking about. At the farmer's market, you and your husband don't think of yourselves as meat vendors as much as dinner consultants.
That's right.
I love that statement.
You know, it's a whole new world of farming these days of what you need to do. But when people come to us at the farmer's market, I realize making the sale or making a big sale is nowhere near as important at the farmer's market as pairing people with what they need. A lot of people are not familiar with the cuts of meat anymore, where they've been away from the farm so long, they don't know what stuff is, and they need to be able to talk. And your business is going to survive much better as a farmer if you can pair people with a successful dinner than if you sell them an expensive piece of meat one time that they go home, and then it's either not enough for their family, or it's too much, or they ruin it. So
yeah,
you want to make sure that they have a good experience. So that might mean, you know, they come, they want their first piece of grass-fed beef, and I'll send them home with hamburger because I want them to have a really good dinner rather than spending money on a porterhouse steak.
Okay. Dinner consultant.
That's right. I'm a dinner consultant.
Lynn in Lake Forest, Illinois, it's your turn. Hi, Lynn. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to mention that in our area we have a brand called Tallgrass, T-A-L-L-G-R-A-S-S.
Yes.
Sounds.
The Lesader family?
I'm sorry?
Is that the Lesader family?
It's a man named Bill Curtis, K-U-R-T-I-S.
Mm-hmm.
He used to be a TV newscaster in Chicago.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And anyway, he has developed this, you know, the tall grass. They have various cuts of meat. We've tried their ground chuck, which was very good, and we made it just hamburgers in the cast iron frying pan, which was, you know, you could tell the difference. And I just, it's available at one of our local markets at Sunset Foods. I don't work for either one of these organizations, just so you know. But they had samplings of it when they introduced the brand there, because they do carry other organic, you know, brands too, and as well as, you know, what we might consider the normal array mm-hmm. of meats and so forth. They had tastings and had the grill set up outside the store and so forth, and it's very good. And I think people, if they tried it, would really
would like it.
The difference, right? I mean, they have different cuts. I think we've also tried, now that I think of it, they're what I would call their pot roast, which, you know, a chuck roast. But it is, you really do notice it, and
And you like it.
We like it, right?
Yeah, well, the flavor of grass-fed meat is much more pronounced than conventional meat, and it also has a much cleaner mouthfeel. And so the beef tastes beefier, it's rich, it's nuttier, and so you'll really notice a flavor difference right away, particularly if the first time you cook it, you don't overdo it with the seasonings. The meat has so much inherent flavor, which is exactly what you're picking up on, that inherent flavor is magnificent, and when you have a good cooking experience from the get-go, it's very hard to go back to conventional meat.
Yeah, it is. And thanks, Lynn. Thank you very much for calling. Tall grass-fed beef cattle.
Yes, I recognize that name now.
Shannon, you made a pilgrimage to Argentina, actually, which is kind of the mecca, I guess, for grass-fed beef, to see how they cook their meats, and I think in preparation for this book. And as a matter of fact, your dedication in the book includes many of the farmers you met there.
Yes, I met a lot.
It sounds like it.
And it's funny, I went down there to study grass-fed beef, and I couldn't believe the amount of pressure that was being put on farmers to start with the grain-fed, which was quite disturbing. But I went out into the rural areas and spent time with sort of the middle to lower income farmers who weren't in the big business end of things. And we cooked a lot together, and I would ask them, they would tell me, this corn-fed, you know, they're starting to bring this corn-fed, and I said, what do you think of that? And they'd say, repugnante. They would tell me it was repugnant when they would taste it. They really liked that grass-fed flavor. And in Argentina, very often, we would eat beef that was much older than what we'd eat here in the United States. A lot of the asadores down there wouldn't even like to start cooking a grass-fed beef till it was at least 4 years old. And here, you know, if a beef crosses age 2, people are thinking that it's too old.
Yeah.
But the older the animal is, the more richer the flavor.
Well, and you got some great recipes out of that.
I did, and some wonderful experiences.
One in particular, this is from Argentina, is the, how is it pronounced, salmuera?
The salmuera.
Salmuera.
Salmuera, yeah, salmuera, or salmuera. Yeah, that's a salt-saturated garlic water, and that comes from the northern part of the country, and it's also used in Brazil as well, and it's a seasoning that has a poverty tradition associated with it. So basically, you're seasoning your meat, you're cooking it slowly, you're cooking it more in the essence of the flame, and you're dancing on the embers more. You're not actually cooking it over fire, and you're then seasoning at the end with this salt-saturated garlic water that puts this delicious crust over it. And it's very, very cheap to do. You need water, salt, pepper, and garlic. And, you know, in Argentina, so much of their food is exported. In fact, they have a joke about their meat. They say, the rest of the world eats our meat, and we eat the bones. But also, a lot of their olive oil production is exported, so they can't afford olive oil. We season quite liberally with that here because we can get it at a very low price. So a lot of people there use the salmuera to season their meats instead, and it's quite tasty.
It sounds like it for sure. Scott in Girard, your turn now. Hi, Scott.
Hello. I'm on a cell phone, so I hope I don't lose you. But I wanted to give you guys a heads up. I really enjoy your show, and I really enjoy the fact that you're talking about this subject. We're grass-fed farmers, or grass based farmers in Northeast Iowa here. And sometimes it just feels like you're overwhelmed with the commodity corn-based type of feeding livestock. And we're actually forming a small group here to try to educate ourselves and anyone else who would be interested in it. It's kind of the Northeast Iowa Holistic Management Group, and I just kind of wanted to put a plug in for that and say thank you guys for the show.
Oh, thanks. Do you guys have a website yet?
No, we don't have a website yet. We're still kind of in the planning stages and getting it up and going. And mostly we're just kind of for support for each other at this point. And we haven't really branched out to getting new members or expanding it that far yet.
Well, that's always good news to hear, Shannon.
Yeah. And in fact, he was talking about holistic management. And I want to touch on that for a bit. What he's forming is a really important group. And these groups are all over the country. We're in a farm group here as well. This form of managing pastures, this style of holistic management, people can learn more about it by going to holisticmanagement.org. It looks at how we can steward the land, and actually one of the benefits is we can help reverse the greenhouse effect through good grazing management. When you are using these good holistic management principles and managing these animals correctly on the pastures, you increase the grass's ability to do something called carbon sequestration. You pull excess carbon out of the air and get it into the soil, and that helps to reverse the greenhouse effect. So when communities, when learning communities form with farmers and consumers who are working on these principles, who are working on managing their businesses using these principles, it's a very powerful thing.
Thank you very much for calling, Scott. I appreciate your call. Well, Shannon, in your I suppose you get asked this a lot, but do you have a favorite recipe out of your book?
There are always so many favorite recipes, but I would probably say the asado is one that I learned down in Argentina, and then just a great burger.
Ah. Well, I tell you what, I'm in your camp. I like a great burger myself. And this is a lot of fun talking with you about it. Have you had how's the book doing, by the way?
The book is doing very well, and I wanted to tell people it's available at grassfedcooking.com. But the other thing about that website, this is the website that I manage for people who want to learn more. They can also get subscribed to a newsletter where I send out articles. But there's also a Q&A there. So as people run into questions and issues about their grass-fed meats, about their experiences, if they have questions about a recipe or a particular cut that they get that maybe isn't as tender as they think, feel free to write to me. I always respond to the questions, and if I feel it's pertinent to the rest of the readers, I will post it. I'll make sure everything is anonymous on it, but I will post that information so that other people can benefit from it as well.
So that's on grassfedcooking.com?
Right, grassfedcooking.com, one word.
And so is that a place, too, where people can order your book, for example?
Absolutely. People can order single copies of the book. And also farmers who want to carry the book to make it available to their customers, they can also buy bulk quantities at very, very steep discounts to do that. And we also have these little don't overdo it magnets, which give people people can put on their refrigerator so that they can learn the right temperatures, because grass-fed meat temperatures vary considerably from USDA temperatures. So the new temperature chart for grass-fed meat is also on there.
And what's the new temperature?
Okay. Well, when you're working with grass-fed beef and bison, the suggested temperature for grass-fed meat is 120. These are the internal temperatures when
right.
Meat is done. 120 to 140 degrees. USDA recommended temperatures are 145 to 170 degrees.
Yep.
You know, another big variation is when you're working with lamb. Lamb,
yep.
The internal temperature should be 120 to 145 degrees. Whereas the USDA says that rare lamb is 145 and you can cook it up to 170. And then pork is 145 degrees to 160 degrees for internal temperature of doneness. And USDA recommends 160 to 170. So it varies quite a bit.
Well, those are good tips, and you'll find a whole lot more in Shannon's book. Shannon, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
It was an absolute pleasure, and I just love answering those questions.
Shannon Hayes, our guest. Author of The Farmer and the Grill. Take a look at her. Get a copy of her book. You could order it, probably get it from your bookstore, certainly, or order it online from grassfedcooking.com. She'd be happy to send you a copy. or more if you want to, if you're a farmer and want to wholesale or sell those out to your clients. Thanks for listening and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.